Welcome to the Inside Scoop Live podcast, where indie authors get personal about their books, their writing, and their passions. I'm your host, Sherry Hoyt. Join me for some lively conversations with debut indie authors and seasoned veterans alike. It's a great place to find your next amazing read or even get inspired. So sit back and enjoy the show and let me know what you think. Hi, everyone. Rachel Stone is on the show today to talk about her debut novel, The Blue Iris. It's a moving tale of Tessa Lewis, who pauses her promising future to confront her past at a childhood flower market, unraveling the intertwined lives and hidden traumas of its community to discover the beauty in letting go and the strength in chosen families. Before we get started, here's the inside scoop on the author. Rachel Stone writes stories of hope and redemption, often set against vibrant Canadian backdrops. Her debut novel, The Blue Iris, was named a Book Life Editor's Pick and placed second in the 2024 Feathered Quill Book Awards. Her award-winning lyric essays have appeared in international literary magazines, journals, and blogs. Rachel holds degrees in psychology and industrial relations and once worked 7 summers at a flower market. She's an active member of the Women's Fiction Writers Association and the proud co-founder of a local volunteer initiative supporting new moms and newly immigrated families in need. She lives near Toronto with her family, and on weekends you'll find her along the shore of Georgian Bay, belting 90s pop rock off-key from her paddleboard. You can learn more about Rachel Stone and her work at rachelstoneauthor.com. Well, hi, Rachel. Welcome to Inside Scoop Live.
Hello. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to talking about your book. You were the winner of our award that we sponsor for the Feathered Quill Book Reviews. So I wanted to congratulate you on that and on your awards with Feathered Quill as well.
Thank you so much. Yes, it was so awesome to get that news. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. So tell us about your book. What is The Blue Iris about? And what was the inspiration behind the story?
Sure. Yeah. The Blue Iris is about a group of people whose lives converge on a flower market in Toronto. And there they learn to own their hardest truths and they discover the beauty that grows in letting go. I like to think of it as sort of a mishmash of This Is Us and Ted Lasso and The Language of Flowers, just in terms of the vibe of it. And the story behind it actually, it essentially came out of personal crisis. Mm. Back in 2017, I had a life is short moment that popped up in the form of a rare benign tumor in my head. And I had dealt with that years prior and been told that there was less than 1% odds this would ever going to come back. And, you know, years had gone by, everything was clear. And all of a sudden, boom, it was back. So that shook everything up. And I put my corporate career on hold. And I just had an hour never, like, I've been dreaming of doing this writing thing forever, giving it a dedicated shot. I got to give it a shot now because, you know, you have that moment. Yeah. And the other side of it was, I was really just looking to distract myself because we were just kind of monitoring and it was a wait and see. So threw myself into writing and was rather determined actually not to write fiction because I'd never really tried fiction. I was much more of a personal essay, nonfiction type, but got into this manuscript and it just grabbed me and took hold. And for the first time in my entire life, in a professional sense, I felt, you know, like 100% locked into what I was doing and aligned with who I was. I know it all sounds very woo, but it was just like something I'd never experienced on a professional plane ever. And I just wanted to do it all the time. I didn't like, I lose 12 hours and I did, you know, I didn't even eat breakfast yet. And I've just been writing and it was just, it really was just magical. And so I kept going and every chance that I could, I would be working on this manuscript. And then I got my follow-up scans that we had been waiting for, and this tumor was not only stable, it was actually shrinking.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, the doctors were, maybe there was an error on the imaging or maybe, and I, you know, there was no logical explanation and I didn't need one. I knew exactly what was going on. I just knew that it was doing this all the time, changing my life. You know, I'd left a very like a stressful career and I credited that completely with turning everything around. And so at that point, I had really no idea if this manuscript was any good. I didn't know if I could finish it. I didn't know if it was going to like ever go see the light of day. Yeah. But it just stopped feeling like a choice at that point. It was like, okay, I need to keep doing this. I need to finish this. And I'm not giving up on this because now it almost feels like my own little miracle. Like, you know, it sort of just became more than a book to me. It means really a lot to me. So from there, I was like, all right, well, I guess we're buckled in and we're going to see this through. Little did I know it was going to take 6 more years, but yeah, so that was the story behind the story, which, you know, changed everything for me.
Wow, that is a pretty amazing story in itself. Wow.
Yeah, I know.
That's crazy. Talk about healing and through writing. Wow.
Yeah. And just, yeah, it just took a turn that I never would have expected. And I'm grateful. I'm grateful that the whole thing happened, really.
Absolutely.
And I feel like I understand now why it happened, because it just made no sense. It was like, why now? Where's this, you know?
Mm-hmm. Wow. So I love the title as well. What is the significance of that within your story? Or how did you come around to this title?
Okay, well, believe it or not, it's actually the fourth title, because this book went under so many different revisions before I kind of figured out what it was really about at its heart. But really, at its heart, the center of this universe in this book is the flower market, which is called the Blue Iris Flower Market. So it's named after that. The flower market got its name because it was founded by a woman named Iris, whose tragic death is sort of hanging over the place for the last 3 decades, and it's derailed her son's lives. And that's sort of where we're at when the book opens. So it's really steeped in history, this market. It is deeply important to each of the characters for different reasons, and it becomes pivotal to their journeys. So through all the iterations and drafts and everything, once that sort of emerged, it was just the natural pick for the title.
Yeah. So the flower market is what the narrative revolves around, the setting. So, yeah.
Yeah, it really is the anchor point for everything. So it just sort of became, but it's fun. And so it didn't really start that way. So then when I got to that point, it was like, oh, and I'm talking with my publisher, and it was like, yeah, we got to call it the Blue Iris. There's no other thing that fits as well as that. So
when it works, it works.
Fourth time's the charm, apparently. Yeah.
Oh, wow. It's a unique setting to me. So it not only represents the setting and it's very central, but it also represents the growth of your characters. And I think particularly Tessa, your lead, can you share more about her journey in the story and kind of what motivates her?
Well, Tessa, she's just finished graduate school. She's 26 years old, and she is suffering from what I call the what's next complex. Mm. You know, this idea that she's got the education, she's got the grades, she's got loads of ambition, she's ready to be something big, you know, quotation marks big. But she does not know what that looks like, and she does not know how to go about it, or, you know, just what does it look like? How do I apply all of this that I have? Mm-hmm. And I think that that's really relatable for a lot of people her age and well beyond her age. There's this pressure that we've got to have it all figured out, you know, especially I think it sort of peaks as 30 approaches. There's this, you know, well, I don't, I'm not sure what my plan is yet. I'm not sure what my career is going to look like. I haven't found a partner. I don't know if I want children. Like, I still don't know. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, there's this sense of they're kicking themselves because they feel like they're falling behind, you know? So what Tessa learns is that's not how it works. You don't get to plan it all in advance. And there's a little sort of sideline in the book about a customer who is determined to grow a very specific color of peonies in a very specific spot that she can view from her kitchen window. And she goes every year and she buys these peonies and she plants them and she does everything you're supposed to do. She does it all by the book. The soil is correct. The conditions are correct. She's doing everything right. And these peonies just do not winter. They do not come back. They do not root. It's just not working, right? And, you know, so eventually she throws in the towel. And then years later, totally different spot of the property, this new strain of peony pops up all on its own, grew from seed, like seeded from the previous peonies that she had planted. Interesting thing about peonies, not to get too technical, but if they grow from seed like that, they're going to look totally different than the mother plant that they came from. They're actually a completely unique strain. So she's got this unique, gorgeous strain of peonies that is now proliferating across the whole side of her yard, and it's spectacular and it's better than she ever expected, you see. But the issue is she can't see it from where it's not where she wanted, you know. She can't see it from her kitchen window. So she's got, and so, like, you know, this is me being all symbolic, but the idea is she ends up cutting a new window in her house because, you know what, the peonies grew where the peonies grew. And you know, one of the guys that works there makes the comment, like, they're gonna grow wherever they want to grow. We're not in charge. We just like to think we're in charge. So I think that really mirrors Tessa's journey and a lot of the characters as well. You know, it's just your path is going to find you no matter what, but it's maybe not going to be where you think it is or how you think it's going to look. And that's just not something we can plan or control. We just got to be open and roll with it.
Yeah. I love her strong determination to, this is going to happen here and now, and it's going to be this and everything I want. And then the universe says, I don't think so, you know.
Yeah. And I think we've all, like, to some degree, that's happened to all of us, right? Like, I don't know, I certainly me, like, I'm always trying to plan. I got a plan. What's, mm-hmm. you know, what's next? And So I related to her journey a lot in that sense.
Yeah. A lot of her relationships are intertwined with the people that she meets at the flower market, and it kind of hints at the theme of a chosen family. And this kind of strikes chords with a lot of readers. And why do you think this theme is so relevant?
You know what? For me, there are few more magical feelings than being in the company of people where you can be 100% yourself. You know, like you know that you're loved, you know that you're accepted, you know that you're in safe company on all levels and in all definitions. And I think we all crave that to some degree. I think it's so relatable that we all know when we feel that way, it's just the best feeling. And again, it's not necessarily with the people you expect. You know, you think you're going to be, this is your tribe, and it actually turns out that some other tribe is your tribe. And, you know, other times you're plodding along surrounded by people that you think are your tribe, and you think this is how it's supposed to feel. And then you find yourself with your real tribe of people, and you go, oh, that's how it really is supposed to feel. And suddenly you can't go back now, right? Like you're going, oh, now I know the difference. And so I think it does strike a chord, because I think everybody's craving that feeling that they're with their people. And I wanted readers to really feel that with this group. They're a very intimate group. They're very closely connected, and that comes from, you know, working back to back 16-hour shifts, right? So like you get to know each other real quick. And I wanted them to feel a part of it as well. I wanted them to feel welcomed into it, just like Tessa was welcomed into it. So I kind of liked how Tessa's the newcomer, and hopefully she takes the readers in with her. And as she's getting embraced by the group, they're sort of feeling the same thing, because I just think everybody deserves to feel that, like as much as we can in life, whether it's in life or in fiction. I just really want people to have that feeling.
Now, you pack a lot into this book.
Yes. There's a reason it took me like 5 years to get.
I love it, though. I love it. I've read some praise about your addressing themes like, love and loss and healing and grounding yourself in truth and then family, like we talked about. Why were these themes important for you to explore? And how do you envision readers relating to these various concepts?
You know, the really crazy part about me exploring these themes, I know it sounds hard to believe, but I actually didn't even realize I was doing it. It certainly wasn't intentional at the start. And so it just kind of, it blows me away in hindsight, because obviously that's clearly what I'm exploring. But I dove into this book initially, I was just looking to distract myself, and that's what I'd been doing all along, right? Like this tumor issue had surfaced, you know, in my late teens the first time, and it messed me up. Like, you know, it just, I had effects from it. If I talked about it, I'd have nightmares, I'd have flashbacks, you know. So my solution all those years ago was to just not talk about it. We're just going to pretend it didn't happen. We're never, ever going to look at the scars, even though they're in the middle of my face, which, so that just got borderline comical. We're just going to pretend it didn't exist. And then, you know, here we are all these years later, you know, the thing comes back up. Now I'm writing this book, and I am genuinely shocked when I'm reading back this finished draft, because, you know, then you're trying to think, okay, you know, you got to do your three line log line, what's it about, and all that. And I'm going, this book is about people who are trying and failing miserably to outrun their hardest truths, their past traumas, the parts of their past that they don't want to acknowledge. And I'm like, wow, do you, like, you know, it was not intentional, but it was. So my life is short moment ended up segueing into the cartoon frying pan, you know, a moment of the head, because I'm like, oh, you know. So it's weird, because my characters were learning this, but in a way I was learning this through them. And I just realized at that moment, like, I got to get good with it. I got to get good with it. You know, I have to acknowledge what has happened and just, you know, take a minute and feel it, because that will make it easier to move forward. And I hope that that's sort of, that's what certainly what the characters learn. And I hope that, you know, readers even can get that too, because, you know, it ties into this lesson writers are always told, you know, slow down where it hurts. Like, don't rush through those parts where your characters are, you know, those really hard parts for your character, the most painful parts, the urge for the writer, because we love our characters and we want to spare them, is to just skip, you know, just, okay, skip over that part. And, you know, in the creative writing classes, you're always told, like, no, you got to experience it, because the reader has to experience it. You know what, you have to take the page time that is needed. Don't wallow in it. Don't get stuck there. Don't belabor it, but you need to take time to let it unfold and let it happen. And it's just crazy to me how that parallels life, you know, like we just have to take a minute, feel the feelings, acknowledge what has happened, and actually that helps you move forward. Like here I am talking to you about it without hesitation, and this is a huge difference from me 10 years ago. You know what I mean? Like it
Oh,
would
yeah.
not have been anything I would approach with anyone at all ever. So it is amazing what happens when you just sit there and just give it a minute, just feel the feelings. You know, it's crazy what a difference that can make.
It sounds like, in just listening to you talk, that this is kind of the way this whole story unfolded. Like, it just came to you. And you called it a miracle earlier, and I feel that.
Yeah, it's so strange. And I was always afraid of fiction. Truthfully, that was what it was. I didn't know how to do it. I thought, well, what do? You just make things up. How do you make things up? I have no ideas.
Yeah.
And I think that was the part that I fell in love with, was that these characters start to materialize out of nothing. And then they start to feel real. And then they start to talk to you. And other writers had said that. And I'm kind of going, yeah, okay, whatever. But it's really true. And I just felt, and so I think that's why I fell so hard for the process in the book. But then the really cool thing is, you are free with fiction to dream up anything you want. You can literally go any place. But then you look back and it was exactly the thing you needed. Like, where you went was exactly where you needed to go. And so I think that's so cool, because it's fiction, but it's so much real life at the same time.
Yeah. It's just a magical transformation from mind to paper, computer.
Yes. I ate my words when I said I would never try fiction.
Now, you also write from different perspectives, and this is your debut novel. You didn't really know what you were doing going into it. And then you choose to write from all these different perspectives as well. So it's like, wow, when I said earlier, you pack a lot into this novel, you really do. What?
Yes.
It seems like writing from the different perspectives is hard. Why did you choose this format, and what were some of the challenges?
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's funny. And in doing so, I actually sometimes feel like this is like my fourth or fifth novel, because it didn't start out that way. It started out very much the story of a young woman, Tessa, who goes to work at a flower market and figures out her life. And what sort of happened during the first draft was these secondary characters just started sort of piping up and demanding their due, and their stories were there and they were interesting. And then I got working with an editor, and she was like, these secondary characters are really compelling. Like, they're, you know, they need to be maybe more than you're giving them. And so it sort of happened by accident. And then at that point we were sort of at a crossroads, and, you know, my editor explained to me, like, you could keep this as Tessa's book, but I'm going to put it out there that I think this is an ensemble. I think that Tessa is an anchor point for all of these other stories, that they all, you know, we can get them to fit together. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes the whole book something entirely different. And that's what it is. And so, you know, as soon as she pointed that out, it was like, oh, yeah, you're right. And I can't unsee that. But at the same time, it was terrifying, because that was going to mean so much more work. And again, like, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know if I'm... So it was, yeah, it was a hugely extensive rewrite at that point to try and see if we could bring out these other characters and make it a true ensemble piece and fully develop them. So yes, it was a lot more edits, a lot more tinkering, because then you got to get all their pieces to fit together. And there was sort of a lot of pulling hair moments, but at the same time, getting to know them each on that level, like, really, I had to get to know each of them as a main character.
Yeah.
It made me really attached to them. And I really so now I feel like they're, you know, talk about chosen family. Like, these are like my family. I really feel attached to these characters. I know them so well. Like, it was living and breathing all of them night and day, this group. And so it was almost like, even though it was that much harder to do that many more characters, the reward almost was that much more. Because then when I could land them all and get them all where I wanted them to be, it was the best feeling. So I think it was worth it. I think at the end of the day, that's, again, we talk about sort of this magical way that it unfolded, and the bones of the book were just all of these points of view. So terrifying as it was at the outset, I felt like if I didn't honor that, and if I didn't go and give each of their characters the due, then it wouldn't be this book. Like, then I might as well just write a different book, because this book very clearly was presenting itself as this group of people and all of their journeys. It wasn't necessarily, I wasn't thrilled about it at the beginning. I was more just really nervous. But at the end, I'm really glad that she pointed it out to me that way, and that I said, yeah, I got to take that.
Yeah. Editors are wonderful. Love your editor. Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And they're always right. They're always right. Even when you're too scared to admit it for a while, you know, you sit with it for a couple of days and then you're like, oh, okay, yeah, I see it now.
That's funny. Well, I think it took it to a deeper level of connection for the readers too. And so I love that.
Thank you. Yeah, I do think in hindsight, you know, that's sort of they talk about every book has their special sauce, right? I think that's the special sauce with this book.
Yeah. So, you know, talking a little bit about the depth and the complexity of the story, what are your hopes for its impact on your readers?
Oh, I hope younger readers, but really all ages of readers, I really hope that that whole conversation about that what's next complex that Tessa is suffering from, I just hope that it resonates with readers that you do not have to have it all figured out. And not by age 30, not by age 40, not by 50, 60, 70. We are all figuring it out as we go. And I feel like the harder somebody's trying to convince you that they've got it all figured out, the more you might want to doubt that. So I really hope that a reader might, turn the last page and go, okay, because all of the characters at all of their varying ages are figuring it out. They do not have a plan. And so the thing that Tessa's so stressed out about at the beginning is it's just part of the journey. It's just how it is. And then the second thing I would really hope that readers take away from the book, but also if, maybe in hearing my story and in arriving at this book, is you have to pay really close attention when something is lighting you up inside. Not so worrying about your path and where it's going to go and what's going to look like, but if something is lighting you up inside, you need to listen to that because that's there for a reason. That's telling you something, and you got to make room for it. So, in the same way that Tessa does when she's embracing this job at the flower market, the same way I am with, writing this manuscript, not having any idea where it's going, I just think that that's really important. You just got to make room for those things that feel different to you, and magical things will happen. I truly believe that.
You're proof to that, aren't you?
I hope so. Yeah. I mean, it doesn't have to be writing. It's anything, right? It's painting, it's gardening, it's yoga, it's whatever. I just think that if it's speaking to you, it's going to do magical things for you if you honor that,
So what kind of feedback have you had from readers? Because I'm sure that was a scary part of your journey, letting it out there for the world to see. Did you have any kind of feedback that you found surprising or an example you can give us that really touched you?
Sure, you're right. It was that was a moment when you're thinking, oh my gosh, it's going out in the world. I always say it's like dropping your kid off at kindergarten for the first time, and you're just like, okay, go out in the world. Please be okay. Please don't get beat up. But the thing that touched me the most was the first time somebody said, I love all the characters. I love that you did all these characters. And at first, I was, and sometimes I'll say, I was a little nervous at first. Wow, there's a lot of character, but it was fine and it worked. And for me, that was hugely gratifying because, we talked about it, that was a decision, that was a fork in the road, and it was like a route that I chose to go very uncertainly. So I love when they say that they love all the characters. And it's sort of been a pattern where, people will say, I don't have a favorite. I love them all. I don't have a favorite. And I think, oh my gosh, really? I was so surprised by that someone might love them all equally, but that is the best thing I could hear. So that really touches me, thrills me, and makes me extremely grateful.
Yeah, it's rewarding to hear that that effort you took with all the characters paid off because your readers are connecting with that aspect of the book.
Yeah, for sure.
So I was going to ask you, what is your favorite character?
Oh, it's so funny. You know what? I think I'm the same. I'm so deeply attached to all of these characters. I think I have a soft spot, probably a little extra, for a character named Daryl, because him and I sort of went through our own little journey together. He started out just a very mean, prickly guy and just unlikable. And I mean, he certainly starts out that way in the book as well, but we sort of had to grow together because what was happening was I just didn't like writing him. I didn't want to be with him. I didn't want to hang out with him. So I had to figure out, okay, we got to get along here somehow because I need to. And so it was a lot of developing, why are you like this? Why are you so miserable? What happened to you? And in doing so, I actually went, oh, okay, now I kind of just want to hug you, Daryl. And I think that's happening with readers too. And Daryl does come up at a lot of book talk events and whatever, where people are saying, I just love Daryl. And so I do maybe have a little soft spot for him, but I mean, I wouldn't say I have a favorite, but just because of sort of how I worked to sort of turn him around and change your mind, and he changed my mind, I think I'm a little bit partial to Daryl, I'd have to say.
Oh, wow. Well, to build on that, looking ahead and all your different characters, will any of them maybe score their own book, or is that something you've thought about? I guess what I'm asking in a roundabout way is, what are your plans going forward?
Yeah, so I have definitely a follow-up to The Blue Iris is in the works, and it's going to be like it's a standalone, but it's picking up from sort of where we left off. We're going to have some familiar characters, we're going to have some new characters. Time has passed, everybody's very different than we remember them. A lot has happened, but the common thread that they all have is that they are examining where their lives have taken them and whether or not they made the wrong choice the first time around. Is sort of where we're at. So that is cooking in the back of my brain. It's marinating, but then at the same time, right now I'm really focusing on the Blue Iris, like wherever I can. I'm saying yes to absolutely everything with regards to the Blue Iris that I possibly can, because I just feel like it took us so long. I say us like the book is a human, like it's me and this book. It took us a long time to get out there and get it done. So I'm really just trying to sort of embrace this moment and enjoy this moment and not really rush too much to book two. I know that will come in good time. I can't wait to get into it. But at the same time, right now, it's a lot of like marketing and promo and book clubs, author events, anything like that. I'm just saying yes to just everything I can squeeze in right now.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, this book is your, I mean, it's your baby, you know, it's your special
project. It sounds
project.
Ridiculous, but yeah. It is. It has been, having had a baby, it is shockingly similar, the emotional journey. Yeah, it really does feel that way. It's I never would have guessed that at the outset that I'd be saying that, but definitely does.
Now, hearing your story that prompted you to write this book in the first place, have you ever considered maybe writing your memoir?
You know what? I haven't really seriously considered it. I mean, you know, I always sort of think, well, there's people who've been through way worse and their journeys are way bigger than mine, right? But if it touches someone in any kind of way and maybe helps them to make room for that special thing for them, I'd consider it, I suppose, if, you know, I reach a point where I'm taking a break from fiction, I wouldn't say it's off the table at all.
Yeah. Sounds like an amazing story. So I was curious.
Yeah.
So I guess reflecting on your journey as a debut author is probably hard to pin down one most important piece of advice, but is there any advice in general that you would give to someone just starting out?
Yeah, I think the one thing I always say is you have to be in love with your book or this idea that you have for a book or whatever the project is. You have to be in love with it because you're going to spend so much time inside that book. It's like more than you can possibly imagine. And so you need to write that story that is keeping you up at night. It's kicking you out of bed in the morning. It will not leave you alone. You cannot forget it if you try. Like that's the thread you should run with, is what I always say. You know, there was a period this summer where, you know, publication of The Blue Iris was approaching and I was reading it back to back to back to back to back. And I thought, man, I swear to God, as much as I love these people, like my children, these characters, if I love them like 10% less, I would just be so done right now. You know, like, you know, and even that's how much I love them. So you got to love it because it is a long journey and it is full of, you know, sinkholes and rejections and revisions. And so like, don't settle for a story that you think can work, or you think it's, you know, you're trying to tailor it to the market or whatever, because like, you got to love it. I mean, do all those things if you want, but just love what it is that you're working on. And then I think that will carry you through. Mm-hmm. And then the other thing that I always say is like, my motto is stand firm, but bend constantly. So be always open to changes, be open to feedback, be open to anything that will make it better, but absolutely refuse to stray from the heart of it, if that makes sense. Like what it is at its core, don't let anybody tell you that needs to go, and you'll know that in your gut. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you got to be really open because, you know, like we talked about, editors are usually right and they're going to tell you to change a lot of stuff. And you may have to sit there and, you know, cry into your notebook for a day or two, but, you know, pick it up and be open. Just be open, because chances are if they're telling you something's not working, it's probably not working. And
right,
that's okay. You'll figure it out. That's why you're doing this. That's why you're going to keep at it. And you love it, so you're going to keep going. But then if they're saying to you, you know, change the book, like, you know, I had people along the way say, you know, we might be interested in picking this up and representing this book if you would just make it Tessa's book. And it was like, but I'm sorry, I can't do that. That's not what this book is. You know, I'm open to edits, I'm open to changes, revisions, but I'm not doing that. I'm not cutting out all the other characters. And so that was just a point I reached where I knew what the heart of this book was, and I was not going to stray from that for anyone. And it, you know, and at the end of the day, I didn't get a big advance and I didn't get, you know, sign with a large publisher. I signed with a small indie press, but I'm happy with that decision because I know that this book is what it is supposed to be.
Yeah.
So I'm good with that. So I would tell any writer, just keep those two things in mind and love your book and you're good to go.
Great.
You will get there.
Yep. Great advice. Thank you. Well, Rachel, is there anything else you wanted to add today?
I've just had such a wonderful time talking with you. Your questions have been so insightful. They have taught me more about myself and my book than I had going in. And so I just really appreciate it. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Well, thank you. It's been an honor to have you on the show today. And thank you for sharing more about you and your work.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for joining me today for my interview with Rachel Stone, author of The Blue Iris. You can learn more about Rachel and her work at rachelstoneauthor.com. And be sure to check out our other interviews on InsideScoopLive.com.